It's raining, and I have to say I like it. Feels normal in Seattle. Feels a little bit like the way the world usually is. Little rain, light mist, overcast. It's good to see an old friend. Rain. But still warm. I like that. It's a good 50 plus degrees this morning. This is David. I'm out for my walk. It's just nice. Seeking a little bit of just calm. Hasn't been calm for many Americans ever. For many who've been jolted out of their calm from elections and then economic crises, and certainly now coronavirus. It feels volatile, visceral, unstable. So a little rain is like having a cookie. Just feels like a favorite song. It's nice out here, Charles.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes when I call in, your tone is like meditative, and I'm like interrupting a moment that you're having.
And I do seek that. Cookies. I do seek that meditative component. It's the centering time. You know, I have long been swimming for the last, I don't know, about 10 years, been doing daily swimming where I swim for an hour or so. And I don't have that right now. And that's not like a devastating loss in the big picture by any means, but it is a meditative loss. So I've certainly sought to find it other places, and these walks are one of those places. I think also too, the lectures, me putting together stories is part of that too. But it just feels calmer this morning. Something like the rain tamps down the pollen, all of that. And I know that it's all just a fiction because it ain't calm. This world isn't calm remotely today. But nice to have 10, 15, 20 minutes.
Sure, sure. Yeah, as much as I love the sun, and we all love when it's, you know, 70 degrees out, right? Yesterday or the day before or something. A gray day, not too dark, a little bit of rain is your classic Seattle day. It does, there's a certain like normal comfort to it that I like.
Yeah. It's weird. I definitely like, it's like a friend return today. And I was like, wow, hello.
No, it's not like, wow, hello. It's like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, you're right.
Hey, you.
Yeah. Let's metaphorically go with this, because you know I dig that. Like we walk, it's like we arrived together and we both sat down together, but there really wasn't much needed to be said. We're just like, hey.
That's right. You just like raise a glass or a coffee, or I hear you're eating a cookie in the morning, so you raise a cookie, you know?
Sure. I feel that's like where you and I are getting. All right. We're like
on these morning things.
Yeah, but for sure. Generally, where I feel like we can come in, we generally do. We do it again metaphorically here on these podcasts and all the phone calls we do, but also in person, we can come into a room and all you have to do is get a head nod or a hello. There isn't a hey, good to see you, because it's so familiar now.
Yeah, there's not. We don't even, you know, people. I think some people would be shocked to know this. But when we hop on some calls, we don't even prep beforehand. I don't even know what you're going to say. Our vice versa sometimes. And these are really like high level things. And we're like two musicians that are used to playing with each other. And it's just, you know, one of us is going to play a note first and the other one's going to go, oh, okay, that's where we're going. Got it. And then, the melodies and stuff. And we just go. And like, oh, wow, they must have been like practicing this and that was so good. And it's like, no, we know each other really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think the constancy of our remote communication has become the essence of so many of our relationships in our world right now that there is relationships being built and solidified in ways that are different than the presence, being in presence with each other. Now you have to add some additional like connective tissue. And that's, to me, I think there's going to be a lot of studies and thinking about this, the ways in which relationships fractured or were solidified or built anew or just like through this time.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I see is that this is a moment that was built for you. This is a moment that you have been, it's almost like you knew it was coming and you've been preparing for a very long time to be able to build and maintain relationships remotely.
Uh-huh.
I used to complain about how often you texted people and called people and, you know, all hours of the day. And you were always at the pool or you were at home or you're at a cafe and you're never in the office. But it was like you're preparing for this quarantine life that you knew was coming. It's like somebody from the future came and they're like, David, I want you to begin to prepare yourself to become the greatest communicator who cannot be physically in front of anybody. And you said, okay, I got it. And so you started to like distance yourself from people physically. And now you're killing it right now. This is your moment, man.
I think it's good for us as an organization to see the strengths of all the different dimensions. And you're right. Blade Runner or somebody came back from the future and told me I couldn't tell anybody though.
That's a good choice. Okay. How about Marty McFly? How about that?
sure. No, wait, who is the doc? The doc.
Oh my gosh, who's the doctor? Who is the doctor of Back to the Future? I'm yelling it out to my house. Nobody knows either. You just call him Doc all the time.
No, it was
Nobody knows. This is really.
That's who I am, man.
I should know this. You're that's you, right?
Yeah, with the hair and everything, man, and I'm, yeah, I don't have any, like, I'm just weird enough, but I know enough stuff about certain important things that I'm, like, relevant, you know, and so it's good.
A Doc Brown, they said his name is Doc Brown. See, I just go by Doc. So you're Doc Donkey. So what you got to do is you got to grow your hair out, though. That's what you haven't
done. Exactly. I know, it's true.
You got to grow the super long hair.
and I think I should expense this on common purpose. I need a DeLorean. Are DeLoreans still around? Okay.
yeah. You know, people actually, there's like there are hobby clubs all around the United States that they actually get together and they buy them and they restore them.
How do you know that, Charles?
Because I'm a nerd.
Okay.
also, if you want to get me on this road trip, man, let's get a DeLorean. I would totally do that.
Yeah. Okay. So they don't make them anymore though, right? Those are long gone. They're not being made though.
They're actually kind of shitty cars.
Yeah, sure.
They weren't the greatest cars. They look super cool though. So yeah, they're, but they're all over the place. People got them. Some of them are like in junkyards and stuff. We can probably get one for cheap.
Cool. All right, good. That'll be something that'll be valuable for us. For our road trip, we're going to need it. They're going to strap it to the top of the RV, and then we're just going to pick it down when we need it.
It's a caravan, man.
A caravan for democracy. Yes, I know. I'm just trying to keep my hopes low. All right.
Okay. All right. So when you make it more fantastical, so it doesn't feel like it's too real.
Sure. Right. So that, you know, I always kind of like, you know, downplay things so that when they occur, then I'm like, this is the greatest, because I'd already prepared myself psychologically for it not to happen. Okay. Which is like sports. Okay, like, you know.
Oh, sure.
All right, thing one. My thing one is calm.
Is calm.
Is finding, okay. Yeah, finding meditative calm. All right, and it is, there's the pacing of this coronavirus quarantine for the millions of Americans who are affected by it. It's horrible. It's tragic. For the many, many millions of Americans who are in quarantine, it has changed the pacing of our lives dramatically. And not always, you know, positive, because the Zoom kind of calls and the anxiety that comes with it. But there's no question that I have noticed, like, the pacing is, we just don't go anywhere. Okay. And so there's no like travel time. I find that interesting. Like, you know, there's just this time. So like, how would you spend that two additional hours a day if you weren't going anywhere?
Yeah. Another thing I noticed is that nobody's missing anything. Huh. Nobody is missing anything. If you decide to stay in all day long and do whatever your hobby is, or for you, make a lecture or do some research, you don't like look on your phone and you've missed a bunch of stuff. There's not like a cool event that you didn't go to. There's not a
party
that your wife went to. There's not a game that you missed. You know, we're all doing the same thing, and nobody is missing any like super unique event. And if there's anything that you did miss, because it's all digital, it's something you can catch up on and watch or get later. There's nothing that we're missing right now. There's no FOMO. There's no fear of missing out anymore.
Is that what that is? I didn't know what that was.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's what so FOMO is a term that the kids made up. The kids, I'm calling myself one of these, my generation. Fear of missing out. It's an acronym for kind of the social anxiety that folks have, younger folks in particular, when they feel like they want to be a part of the pack more, when they're building their identities, their social identities, and their networking. And it's the fear that they have, like, you know, taken a nap and missed a party, or weren't invited to something, or some big event happened and they, you know, didn't know about it or something. That's gone now. It is gone. And maybe some level of social anxieties are gone now as well.
Huh. That's interesting. I know I have read some stuff about anxiety and Zoom. It definitely is a triggering environment for people, for certain people who the heightened anxiety of seeing their own image, and also the performative element of it is
sure,
challenging.
Sure.
Yeah.
So maybe we just replaced some.
Yeah, exactly.
Seeing your own image, that's interesting. And having to like remain still, because you're supposed to like not move.
Oh, right. I know. I've been working on that in our salons that we're doing, to just wait, like when you and Maria and others are talking, to just stand there without moving.
I know, me too. And I try to like put my arms in a certain place, and then I like get uncomfortable, and I think, oh, I shouldn't move though. And so I'm just thinking about my body staying still. So there's your calm. I'm trying to stay calm on the Zoom.
Okay.
That's funny. All right, that's number one.
Okay.
So number two, and this is something that I have
Good morning.
Been seeing over time, but I don't think we've talked about it yet, but I wanted to get your take on this. I was watching Cuomo's address today.
Okay.
And we've talked about the Cuomo brothers before. Andrew Cuomo is the governor. It struck me how much he knows.
Okay.
How much, because he's not like sitting there reading cards. Like this guy, he goes off on tangents right. sometimes. But he knows all about the process of testing. He understands where the bottlenecks are. This was today, he was talking about this. He was explaining concepts, like he would use terms and go, what is this? Well, this is da-da-da-da-da. And he fully understands this crisis, and he fully understands how to communicate it. He has a level of intelligence, just like basic. He's not brilliant, but it's like it's the kind of intelligence and understanding about a crisis that you would expect from a leader. And it is, placed against Trump, it is like night and day. He stands out even more. I wish he was giving addresses for the entire country. I think people have said this before, but you know, the data that he gives on New York and the way he talks about it, it is what I wish we had for the entire country. I know Inslee has done some pretty good ones, but Cuomo really, really knows. He knows his shit. And then tying that to like knowing your stuff to Nate Silver, we've talked about 538 in terms of politics, but yeah. I'm pretty sure you've seen this, and you've probably noticed it and seen it more than I have. But he's turned his data analysis over to COVID-19.
Yeah,
it is some of the best breakdown of international data actually. And where he sees like valid data, trends that the news doesn't report on because maybe it's too nuanced or something, or any like errors that he sees in data coming out of countries. It's really it's refreshing to get cold, hard facts about really, really big, important things. And that's my thing number two is I love that. The folks who have learned how to leverage their platforms for really, really clear, informative communication. You know, maybe I think I'd add you in there. You just gave a lecture to the public. It was like 700, almost 800 people, just about voting in this coronavirus moment. Last week you gave that. And I just think that anyone who's doing that right now is doing the right thing.
Thanks. I have noticed exactly what you're talking about. So Silver came to fame in 2008 when he was blogging for Daily Kos. It was about sports because he started with sports and then he morphed that into politics. Okay.
Right.
And so when he wrote a book called The Signal and the Noise, a book I read back when he wrote it. This was like 2010. He took all of these different domains of life that have been and would further be enhanced by probabilistic statistical analysis. Okay. Mm-hmm. And probabilistic statistics is like you talk about trends and patterns and likelihoods. Mm-hmm. You're never in the realm of determinative, okay?
Sure.
And so, like when he predicted that Trump had a one-third chance to win the presidency in 2000, 16. Lots of people have criticized him. They said, you got it wrong. Clinton, you had Clinton at a 2/3 chance to win. But that's what probabilities are. They're not certain. That's right. Right? So he's turned that on COVID, no question. And the whole debate and discussion around modeling of illnesses or cases of sickness of COVID and death has been a really pretty rigorous debate among epidemiologists and medical and health professionals, mm-hmm. as well as statistical analysts. And it's really important stuff because what's going on is people get a sense of control. That's what we get out of this. We get a sense of like control and understanding. Okay. And to see Silver, there's a guy, Scott Gottlieb, who was in the Obama White House. There's this guy, Brendan Nyhan, who's at Dartmouth. The reality is they're all kind of like out, and there's at the University of Washington, there's this nationally renowned health medical epidemiology modeling that's become kind of like the centerpiece nationally. They're all rigorously debating each other about what this looks like. And, you know, I think it's all really important, and I agree that there's a place for it and that we all need to step up, and that's what we're doing. At the same time, it's just probabilities. The reality is that because political actors are out here making certain choices that run counter to what a reasoned probability analysis would predict, you don't have control. The models are just predictive. That's all they are.
Well, and the other thing about folks that are doing that work now is that there's no precedent. There's no like modern precedent. So, I mean, you go back to the Spanish flu and it's not like there's a ton of really good data coming out of that. This is similar to in terms of like it involves millions of human beings, but it's completely different from politics because there's not the cyclical like data that you have incoming where you can test trends and stuff. So these folks are out there out in the middle of nowhere, kind of throwing out their best guesses. And the trends that we're seeing are, you know, are they guessing right most of the time? And they seem to be doing pretty well. And that work that they're doing is what these governors are using to, you know, make these really heavy calls in their states, yep. to keep locked down, to decide to open up, to partner together, to resource materials, masks, PPE stuff that they need. This is all uncharted waters. And these people that are giving us this like clear-eyed, data-centric perspective are really, really important.
Yeah. Yep, it's interesting, and this is where the social media technology facilitates this kind of an analysis and debate, because otherwise they wouldn't have forums. They could go on cable TV, that'd be one forum, but this is real-time conversation back and forth on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagrams.
So I think you and I have this debate often about technology, and this is one place where technology has a ton of value. If they're forced in the cable news or local news television or whatever, they are beholden to the editors of and the producers of these programs. There's a controlling interest there that decides what goes on and what doesn't and how long they get. And we were able to hear from these folks whenever they want to tell us something. You know, Nate Silver is on his phone at his home, looking at his laptop. You know what I mean? Andrew Cuomo is deciding to do these things on Saturdays. These are people that have data and their perspective. And they're giving it to us as soon as they feel like it. You are able to take a walk and invent a lecture and then decide, you know, a week, 2 weeks later that you're gonna put it on for folks.
That's kind of
technology is a great equalizer.
Sure. I mean, you're talking about a pandemic in the midst of social media technology. It's an never been here.
Okay. Number three. You got a number three?
I think I do. Just a second. I'm checking our mailbox.
So? Okay. Is this the pillar box?
It is. Yep.
Okay. So, yesterday decided to mail us a letter regarding our Caravan for Democracy, it'll be in
there, right? There is. There's three letters in here. I'm going to open them when I get home. But I picked up, we have a P.O. box, and I stopped by and checked it out. I also had to mail some bills, personal bills as well. So this was my little stop off. You know, the whole way in which we interact in public spaces now is so fascinating, right? You were talking about this yesterday when you went into the bakery. Like you just keep a distance and then you wait and you just kind of like, it's just like in the post office, there's 10 people there in the post office, but they're all kind of like trying, they're no longer, is it just like they're there by themselves. They are there as a community now.
Yeah, so that's interesting. You're not like you in the post office. You're acutely aware of every single other person there, and then you have to navigate around them. And so by default, you have to acknowledge their presence.
Yeah. I agree.
You're forced to acknowledge the presence of other people. That's a very interesting concept.
Right. You can choose to ignore those other people, and you can put yourself at risk. But when you do that, you also put them at risk. And so you have to have like this sociopathic kind of mindset to choose to ignore others. Like the social consequences of not acknowledging and paying attention to others now is much, much greater.
Yeah, people will let you know. People like David Domke will let you know in a not so polite way that you're invading a 6 feet space.
Yeah, yesterday I'm out walking, and
is this another almost thing? Why do you? This is... Listen, man. We are trying to come closer as a community during these times. We can't have you out here creating enemies on the sidewalk every day. Every morning when you go for a walk, you can't almost get into a fight.
I'm walking down the sidewalk yesterday, and this was in the afternoon yesterday. I was on some kind of phone call with probably you. And so it was one of the 12 calls. And I'm on the sidewalk right now, there's two squares that are joined next to each other to make the rectangle. And they're like square, square, square. So I walk down one lane. I'm on one lane. Mm-hmm. And somebody goes by me in the other lane, right next to me. Mm-hmm. Like they might have brushed my elbow. I'm not sure. Okay.
Did you wash it?
Well, they were jogging. They were jogging and they went right past me. And I was totally taken aback because they came from behind and I didn't know they were coming. So then what was interesting is because it was a beautiful day yesterday, there were a lot of other people out walking too. So I watched this guy go down the sidewalk the same way and watched people respond to him. Right?
And, really?
And everybody, like people... So I was kind of like at the beginning of the block. So they saw the way he passed me. So others moved out into the street. And he just kept going. And then somebody kind of like said something to him down the block. And so it's a social norm now. And social norms vary in terms of the power of them. Sometimes they're just mean, mild, polite things. This is my third thing, by the way. They're mild, polite things.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's become that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Like on an airplane, like who gets the armrest? Okay. Usually, okay. Usually that doesn't escalate to anything big, but occasionally it does, but usually it doesn't. But then there are certain social norms that really have major consequences that when you violate them, you do. The risks are so great for everybody that you have hurt us. You are damaging us as a community.
Yeah. And when in times of crisis, I think people are more, they're more willing to speak up. When they feel supported, I think that's what it is. When people feel like, hey, I'm going to say something because more people agree with me. And a bunch of people are probably going to have my back.
So this has clearly become one of my social norms of like, violation of it carries consequences. And I have been really, really attuned to this with Lisa and her importance for her health of me not bringing something mm-hmm. back when I'm out. Mm-hmm. And also I've had to further buy into it psychologically because we've had to imprint it upon our youngest son very strongly. Like, we are going to let you bike ride with a friend, but here's how you have to bike ride. And if you violate it, then there's going to be consequences. So we have to not only believe it, we have to like impose it on him. So we have bought into it. The norm is a big deal to us. The norm is a big deal to us at this time. So I wanted to ask you, in terms of social norms on a daily basis in your life, but pre-coronavirus, what's a social norm that, like, a blinker, turning on a blinker or not, what's a social norm that is enough for you to stop somebody or to generally be pissed if it's violated?
So to generally be pissed. So this is an interesting question for me. I'm a person of color living in Magnolia.
Okay. All right.
For somebody like me, so I'm thinking like grocery store, post office, walking around the neighborhood or something. For a person like me, it is my default is actually to not is that I don't have a place to speak up in a place like Magnolia is to actually not stand out for the sake of my family and myself because I already stand out.
Okay.
So there's that. There's not like I am very like very seldomly do I find myself when I'm out and about here, Ballard or Magnolia. Do I speak out? The times when I will say something is if I see some like really major injustice, like if somebody cuts in front of like a disabled or a differently abled or an elderly person in line, like at the grocery store or something.
Yep.
The cutting in line thing is one where I will say something. That is like one of the times when I will. And it's funny because it's one of those moments where, again, it is the like protection of the herd. Like I'm there. There's a bunch of other people. Everyone's seeing the same thing I'm seeing going on. And then this injustice happens in front of all of us. And I will say something. Especially in that situation where I've got like witnesses. So if it's just like me and one other person, okay, that is sure. What I will not say. I won't say anything, right? Because I don't have witnesses. But if we all saw something happen and nobody says anything, I will be one of the first people to jump in, and I'll make it known that what you just did is not okay, and I'm going to say it really loud. I'm going to embarrass you,
and I'm going to make everyone understand that like what this person did is not okay. So I have done that.
So the cutting in line at a grocery store or at a store or at a movie or something like this, the cutting in line tricks some kind of trigger for you that is just like, that's not okay.
Yeah, somebody taking advantage of somebody else, like who is, because it's always like somebody who's confused or slower or something.
Okay.
And they, you know, somebody feels like they're going to take that moment and jump in front of that person. Yeah, that's when I kind of swoop in. It's not so much the cutting in line thing on its own, but it's things that are like that, where somebody who is, you know, differently able is unable to like to react as quickly.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's about power there, that somebody is abusing their the power, and they felt either intentionally that they could do it or unintentionally did it, and you're feeling like the moment is here to say something. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And that's how I kind of feel. That's how I feel with this issue of distancing right now. Like if I was walking towards somebody and they were coming down the street towards me, and I would make no big deal out of it. I'm the one who goes into the street. Okay. I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if they came into the street too, right. Then.
Well, so let's go back to the power thing. So this guy, the guy who's running, you know, this is, you know, people who run, run for leisure. These are not normally like lower income people.
Sure, right?
These
sure.
are people that socioeconomically are at a certain level. They're healthy, right? So they're more able than other people. And so he should be the one in the street, damn it. Because the sidewalks are where people who can't run actually need to be. So get off the damn sidewalk, right?
Right. This is really interesting. I think we're probing on something that has deep foundational dimensions for common purpose, right? It's about it's about a just and inclusive society, and I think you and I are on the same page that we can't take on like all injustices. That's beyond us. Okay, but the reality is there is something we can tangibly do in a foundational arena of American life, politics and voting. And in that space, we have further narrowed it down to two distinct things we can do within that space. Like we can't bring lawsuits, but we can do these other things. We can volunteer, we can make phone calls. I think that, right, we fundamentally feel it's about seeking a more just space. And so this is our way of like standing up.
Yeah, yeah. So we do it in large ways with hundreds of people, in really pivotal moments, like in Wisconsin, and we do it in really, really small ways on the sidewalks and grocery stores in Seattle. So we live it. We live it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I think that. Well, I'm gonna go get a. What's it called? An ube, I think.
What are you doing?
Isn't that what you bought at the bakery yesterday?
Yeah, ube is like a flavor.
Oh, it is?
Okay. That's like saying I'm gonna go get a vanilla.
I thought it was like a croissant or something. Okay.
Yeah, you have to attach a thing. Yeah, so like an ube like roll or shake. You can get a shake, a milkshake.
Bubble tea,
you know?
So what is the taste of it? What is it like? Can you give me like a mainstream?
No, I don't. It doesn't taste like, you know, it's like, what does strawberry taste like? It tastes like strawberry. I don't know.
Okay.
It has like a milky kind of flavor to it. I don't know, but it's always sweetened. So whatever the like... I think ube is like a root.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. My wife and my sister are. It's like a yam. Well, it's like a root. root? A potato is like in the ground like a root, right? Is it? You know what? I don't know. Okay, so it's underground. It's one of the things that grows underground. See, now look. See, I just totally just blew up my whole, like, intelligence is important during coronavirus. what is a potato? But people add sugar. It's purple. It's really big in Filipino desserts. It's been adopted to some Asian desserts. So it's probably not something that you would eat. I think you would describe it as like a funny flavor, but it's not strong though. So I don't know. Maybe this is something that we try out at some point because it doesn't have a strong flavor.
All right. I'm putting it down on the to-do list for our road trip. Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. Because as we drive across Middle America, we're going to get some exotic Filipino dessert somewhere.
I'm expecting us to get in maybe eastern Montana or western South Dakota. Okay?
Sure. So, yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. That's great. Did you get your cookies last night?
You know, I didn't because I decided instead to I had some Oreos in the house, so they filled the quadrant, and then I made Rice Krispie treats for I think the eighth time in the last 2 weeks.
Okay, did you share any, or did you just sit there and consume a pan by yourself?
Both. I left.
Okay. Go ahead.
I left it open for people. This is my methodology. You're aware of it. I left it open for people to eat some, and then once that window was closed, I ate the rest.
Do you post the window so that people understand? Is this like an unspoken thing? Like in your head, there's a timer, but no one else knows this exists.
No, they know it exists. I mean, it's like. Oh, I don't know. It's like using the bathroom in a family where there's multiple people who have to use the bathroom. Like there's a window before the person who's going to use the bathroom the longest gets in there, and everybody knows that like they got to get in because it's going to be occupied for like 45 minutes.
Okay.
So and it just becomes known.
I have this image of you like baking a pan of Rice Krispies. And then sitting it like on the table, but you're sitting there too, and you're staring at the pan, and like you notify everybody, maybe like shout it out or something, or no, you probably text everybody or something, and then you sit there, and you like you eat a bunch of it, and then you just sit and wait, and you're looking at your clock, or your watch, or your phone or whatever, and then you're just waiting, and then. And then there's a certain time where, like, this alarm goes off, and then you just consume with both hands the rest of the Rice Krispies pan.
No, you are so far off.
Really?
Okay. So I make it, and I leave it, and I depart the premises. Okay?
Okay. Because you can't sit there and stare at it and not eat it. You're right. You're right. You've got to leave. This is David Donkin, yes.
And that's the cue. That's the signal. Like David / dad / friend has left the room, right? And so this is the moment. Like people start to, like the flow of traffic goes the other way as I'm leaving. And then like I'm back at a certain time and whatever's left is I'm going to eat it. It's mine. And I bring it into like the other room and I'm usually reading or watching some sports or doing both. And I just munch on the stuff for like an hour. It's so good.
An hour. Hey, yeah. I want to give a shout out to David Horsey, who did the cartoon for our Seattle Times op-ed. He traveled with us to South Carolina. He did some cartoons during that time around the trip and what was going on with Trump and stuff. And David Horsey, if you're listening to this, I would like a sketch of David Domke during the coronavirus. Whatever else you put in it, you have got to put a pan of Rice Krispies right in front of it. I need just a rough, it could be pencil, just something super simple, but Horsey, otherwise known as Cowboy Dave, if you hear this, please, I need this.
Sure. We're wrapping up here. So tomorrow, this is Saturday, the 18th. Tomorrow, the 19th, we're doing a Zoom call with a person who's been part of a program in Wisconsin called Neighbor to Neighbor, which is part of the Wisconsin Democrats' activism and engagement around voter registration and voter mobilization that they've been involved in for a couple of years now. So he's going to join us at 10 a.m. Pacific time tomorrow. If you're interested in that and don't have the information on how to join that, you can email us at hello@cpnow.org. So
I'll also put that information on the website too.
Sure. Okay, that sounds good. So let's get back to work. I got to do another podcast here in a few minutes.
Another one?
Yeah, this is going to be recorded. It'll go up tomorrow. Nice. It's my finding inspiration one. I'm going to interview Maiwa Aina.
Oh my gosh, you're so lucky.
I know.
That's awesome.
She's in Alaska. Yeah.
That's going to be really good. So everyone's going to hear this podcast today, and then that one's going up tomorrow. Everybody,
yeah,
listening to this podcast, tune into that one tomorrow. Maiwa is one of the most talented individuals I've ever met. And she will, you will see that name in very big ways at some point in the future here.
Totally.
All right.
Okay, let's go. Let's go back to work.
Let's do it.
See ya.